this afternoon. The committee will come to order and take your seats. There is a quorum present, and President Burns, knowing that you've read all the minutes, would you move the minutes for us?
So moved.
Thank you, President Burns. All those in favor of the minutes from yesterday, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Same time? Seeing none, the minutes are approved from yesterday.
Oh, I guess I need to be on the mic here. Having said that, we've got a bill here. You know, it's got a really, really great author, and he's going to be up there in a minute as soon as he passes this over. No, you can do it right from there. You don't have to. As soon as he gets his paperwork together. House file 290.
You can move it to the left.
You're just a troublemaker this morning, Representative. Okay. The first bill we have is House file 290, and our self-imposed wonderful presenter has gotten to his spot. Representative Mahoney moves House file 290, I believe. Is that the case?
That is correct, Madam Chair. House file 290 is an appropriations bill, and we're just going to look at the policy on this particular bill. This bill funds the University Enterprise Labs, which is an incubator for biobusinesses spun off from the University of Minnesota and other startups from the bio industries and the science industry. I've got a couple of testifiers. Randy Olson, who is the director of UEL, and Dean Eldy from their board today. Now, I want to say a few things about the bill and then turn it over to the testifiers. But one of the reasons I brought this bill forward was that the University Enterprise Labs is a place where these small businesses can get a start, can grow to into larger businesses. They provide, the UEL, or the University Enterprise Labs, provides more or less a subsidized lab space, modern lab space for these companies to start their business and grow. They get to share in their knowledge between companies, and I'm sure these two gentlemen will tell us exactly how many businesses are there and how large it's grown in the 2 years, or is it 3 years it's been in existence. You'll come to that also. I could say things like they provide a critical support for growing, but I think I've already said that. They provide a culture where these companies kind of cross disciplines. So if someone's working on nanotechnology, which is the small particles, has something that could actually work in a, replacing knee joints, it's a good idea. And it's something that we need to look at as a state and hopefully get hit the next home run with it. What I'm trying to do with this bill is, remember back when one of our first presentations from the U, the Bio Business Alliance, where they talked about the need, the critical need to identify the assessment in the state, and they needed to do a better. We need to do a better job of supporting the startups of new businesses. We need to do a better job of allowing these people the opportunity to cross discipline lines. That's what the UEL does. 70% of the people in the bio industries are employed by companies with less than 100 employees. And this is where they start. So members, I hope you'll listen to these two testifiers and move this bill to finance, I think it is. So with that, I will turn it over to Dean Eldy and Randy Olson, the executive director. Or did I change your title already?
You can call me whatever you want. General manager, actually.
A good man doing a great job.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee. And if you would introduce yourselves into the record, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm Robert Eldy, and I serve in this capacity as chair of the board of University Enterprise Laboratories. You've seen me here wearing other hats. I'm dean of the College of Biological Sciences at the University of Minnesota and chair of the executive committee of the university's initiative in renewable energy and the environment. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to present the case for support for UEL before your committee this morning, and grateful for the leadership that Representative Mahoney has shown in introducing this bill. Why did we start University Enterprise Laboratory? Well, first and foremost, it goes back to my role as dean of the College of Biological Sciences. I needed to retain some star faculty members who were persuaded they could not do a startup from their discoveries in their research laboratory here in the state of Minnesota. One of the big stumbling blocks, and there were several, was adequate research space outside of the academic environment that could, but was close enough to the academic environment to piggyback on the work that they were doing in their research laboratory. There simply was a failure in the real estate market here to address adequate kinds of high-end space to conduct this molecular biological research as a startup company. If you will, legend has it, and I think it's the case, that Earl Bakken started Medtronic in his garage. There were no garages suitable for molecular biology in the neighborhood of the University of Minnesota. So we took on the task of establishing a garage, a series of a neighborhood of garages, if you will, that could enable us to retain and to recruit great faculty to the University of Minnesota. I would also say that the same holds for students. We had been attracting a great cadre of students to as undergrads to the College of Biological Sciences and to our graduate programs. But I must say, back 10 years ago, we were training the workforce for San Diego and Boston. There was very little evidence of a bioeconomy in the state of Minnesota. And I thought that was inappropriate for us to be doing work for our coastal communities. And to attract the brightest students who aspire to merge biology and business, we needed to show them evidence that there were career pathways for them through entrepreneurship and startup companies here in Minnesota, and places where instead of for a part-time job flipping burgers at the local Burger King or McDonald's, they could be working in a biotech startup company. So because of those reasons, we took the steps to establish UEL. And we've distributed, in addition to a folder, a timeline titled, and I'll just walk you briefly through that timeline, called Creating University Enterprise Laboratories, to give you the history of when this started and what our pathway has been to date. So it was back in 2000 and 2001 when I received the letter of resignation from one of our star faculty members saying he concluded he was going to have to move to San Francisco in order to do his startup. President Udoff was president of the University of Minnesota at the time, and we established provisional arrangements to accommodate that startup company and several others within university facilities until we could create a formal incubator facility. President Udoff encouraged us to do this, and we set on that pathway. The first step in that pathway was conducting a feasibility study. We hired a consulting firm to scout out other success stories and other horror stories, and there had been many, because we were hardly the first university to go down this pathway. In fact, we were among the last of the public and private research universities to have anything resembling an incubator facility in the neighborhood of the university. So consultants presented this feasibility study to the inaugural advisory board, and we set on the pathway. That study recommended that the university itself would not be a hospitable home for such an incubator because of the usual bureaucratic arrangements that universities have in acting facilely on fast-moving opportunities, and that the way that this should really be established is as a standalone not-for-profit, because it doesn't work as a business proposition, and it should be a charitable not-for-profit, so it would be eligible to receive funds from both public and private resources. So University Enterprise Laboratories, as you'll see down there in 2003, July, we received the approval from the IRS for our tax-exempt status as a 501c3 charitable not-for-profit. In the meantime, the city of St. Paul, then under the leadership of Mayor Randy Kelly, became our close partners with this, and also XL Energy came on board as the first partner and put $2 million of contributions on the table. We then used that as the basis and launched a full-fledged fundraising campaign, and by August of 2004, we had worked with both the city, the University of Minnesota Foundation, XL Energy, and the private sector. And I think within your packet, you will find a sheet, a gray sheet, that is down about three or four pages in the packet, and it lists the donors from the private sector largely and from the University of Minnesota and the levels of their commitments that netted the $9.25 million that allowed us to then move toward financing, closing the financing deal on the property that was acquired by the City of St. Paul initially, and then through the financing bought from the City of St. Paul and now under the ownership of UEL. PRISM Research, a clinical research facility, is our anchor tenant. They operate a 24/7, 52-bed clinical trials operation. We formally opened the facility in July of 2005, offering lab space to the tenants that we had been provisionally housing within university space. And these tenants, I should say, are a mix of companies that started with university-based IP from existing companies around town, so spin-offs from existing companies such as Sermotics, and companies that started with independent intellectual property. And you'll hear from one of those in just a few minutes. We were fortunate to, in March of 2006, just under a year ago, hired Randy Olson, who I'll turn the podium over to in just a moment, as our general manager. And in the meantime, the university itself has taken some really dramatic steps. You heard in some of the earliest testimony to this committee, this session, testimony from Tim Mulcahy, the university's vice president for research. He has taken the reins. He came from University of Wisconsin-Madison, where they've been doing this very well for 18 years. Tim Mulcahy has brought into the University Enterprise Laboratories in the non-incubator space the offices of the Office of Business Development that has a specific charge to create 5 new startup companies per year based on University of Minnesota intellectual property. Mulcahy also brought in the university's newly opened Academic and Corporate Relations Center that had a big, very successful event attended by about 700 people just 2 weeks ago. And the newly reorganized University Office of Technology Commercialization is also housed within this facility. So the university, the private sector, and many volunteers have come together to make University Enterprise Labs a striking success to date. I have to say we're an outlier, though, and Randy Olson will outline a bit more of that. We're an outlier in that today we've made it almost entirely without state support. We were eligible, being in the Job Z Bioscience Zone, to receive a rebate on the construction materials used in renovating the facility to the tune of about $170,000, and we're very grateful for that. We are a tax-paying entity, in spite of the fact that we're a charitable not-for-profit, so we're paying property taxes to the appropriate jurisdictions. But to date, we've received, in contrast to our peers in our neighboring states, Wisconsin, Iowa, the Dakotas, and virtually every other state in the country, we've received no general appropriation from the state of Minnesota to help boost this frank effort in economic development in the bioscience sector. So that's why we're here with you today, asking you to consider among your investments that you consider this investment in University Enterprise Laboratories to ensure its long-term fiscal success. So with that, I turn it to my colleague, Randy Olson.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Randy Olson. I'm the general manager of the University Enterprise Laboratories. And first of all, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present before you today. We're actually just down the road, about 3 miles from here, and would welcome the opportunity to host any of you, either in a committee setting or individually. As Dean Aldi indicated, we had an open house last week attended by several legislators. At that open house, we had several of our tenant companies display their products and services, and it was a very well-attended event. But I wanted to just briefly review with you some information in your packets, and hopefully each of you has a packet. There is a cover letter along with, as Dean Aldi indicated, a best practices review of incubators and research parks. The board of directors of the UEL went to great lengths to evaluate what state support had been provided to incubator facilities and research parks in neighboring states. It's the document that just says memorandum. I think it's the maybe the second or third document in the packet of information. And so there was an analysis of Iowa State University, North Dakota State University, University of North Dakota, the South Dakota Technology Business Center, University of Wisconsin, and then also Georgia Tech. And there also is a website that's referenced that is actually updated by BIO, the organization BIO. But in all instances, with these particular initiatives, the state was actually the lead financing source. And you'll note the dollar amounts that are quoted. I mean, it's everywhere from $5 million at Georgia Tech, and they also provide $3 million in operating subsidies to land that was acquired and effectively leased back for a dollar. So the arrangements vary, but the theme is one of consistency and that the state provided the leadership in support of the incubator or technology research parks. There also is a list of the board of directors, and then I also wanted to draw your attention to a survey that we conducted of our tenants back in October of last year. And I think as you've heard with the BioBusiness Alliance and the University of Minnesota presentation, there is a strong correlation to the technology community and well-paid jobs because these are, by and large, highly educated people. And so the number of people that we have working at the University Enterprise Laboratories really substantiates those statistics. You'll see, for example, on question number 3, that over 2/3 of the people that work in our building make $60,000 a year or more. And not surprisingly, 1/3 of them have a graduate degree. 2/3 of them have a 4-year degree. Now, this was 15 companies that responded to this survey, and there were 124 employees that were effectively evaluated for this survey. And then there's some other statistical questions that we asked about. What are your greatest issues to growing your business in Minnesota? And access to capital was number one. Taxes and government regulations and recruitment and retention of qualified employees, number two. So, again, this probably mirrors the greater small business community in Minnesota, but we thought that this was interesting information for you to be able to evaluate. There also is a tenant list and then also some information on what's referred to as the Twin Cities Bioscience Research Corridor. And so at some point in time, we're very hopeful that the UEL will be one of several buildings to populate the St. Paul Highway 280 corridor. But then we're virtually a stone's throw away from the city of Minneapolis line, and we hope at some point in time that this initiative can span westward into the city of Minneapolis. We are here requesting $5 million basically to support the vision, the mission, and the operations, frankly, of the UEL. And we have a unique setting for our tenants. To date, we have 23 tenant companies. Our occupancy rate is at 70%. and will increase to about 90% by mid-year of this year. And that will be resulting because of new tenants that come to the building and then also existing tenants that are expanding within the facility. I will also say, too, that unlike a simple real estate proposition, we do provide a lot of value to our tenant companies. We have a shared laboratory, actually, with state-of-the-art equipment that is available to the tenants. We have access to conference rooms and a whole host of office equipment, and then ongoing business development services, assistance with fundraising and management recruitment and vendor relations. I don't want to spend more time talking to you about my role, because I think the true assets of the UEL are really our tenant companies. And I'd like to introduce one of our tenant companies. He is the Chief Operating Officer, Phil Messina, with a company called Geldel Technologies. And Geldel is a company that has been at the UEL right from the start.
Thank you, Randy. Good morning, Madam Chair.
Morning,
members. I'm Phil Messina, Chief Operating Officer of Geldel Technologies. And let me start out by saying that we were actually one of the first tenants at the UEL building. We've been there about 2 years now. And when we came to the UEL, we had two employees. And today we have eight. And over the last couple of years, the company has had a lot of success in terms of the growth and the services that we've utilized at the UEL. Last year in March, the company was awarded a $2.1 million NIH-SBIR grant to continue the work that Dr. David Masters developed, who's the founder of the company, and cultivate that technology so that we can further develop it and bring it into humans. A second initiative that the company has going on right now is that we have raised about $2.5 million through private investors. And that's private equity. We have about 60 shareholders in the company. And that capital is being used to promote and further our human clinical trials for one of our other products that we develop. Now, I think the point I'm trying to make is that without labs and space like the UEL, we couldn't have done this in our garage. It's just impossible. And so based on the logistics of the building, based on the resources available, proximity in terms of where the university is to the UEL building, we've been able to utilize resources that we would have otherwise had to go out of state or drive across town for. So the building's very important to us. Our eight employees all live in St. Paul, Minneapolis area. It's a pretty easy drive for them. The when Dr. David Masters founded the company, he started at the University of Minnesota St. Paul campus in Wildale building, and he had a very small office and one lab. Well, that was where the R&D spawned, and then after a while we didn't know where we were going to go. So as Dean Bob Eldy created, had this vision and put together a number of resources and support to create this opportunity for companies like ours, we realized quickly that it was important to our overall growth. So we're happy to be there. We would like to continue to be there. I think a big part of why we're all here is because we're creating jobs. And I think jobs are important in the state of Minnesota. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are we willing to take questions? Yes, Representative Mahoney.
Before we actually get into questions or discussions, I have to go back, and I should have offered an author's amendment to start with, and I did not. So before we take any questions, if there are any, I'd like to offer the author's amendment 290A1. Has that been passed out? The way the bill is written at the current time, the way the bill is written at the current time is that it is it's ongoing funding, and this is really just a one-time funding. So what this amendment does is change it from ongoing to one-time funding. And when it's passed out there, I will explain it. And I don't think there should be. I'll answer any questions. I certainly hope there's not. Hope there's not any opposition to it.
Okay. Representative Mahoney has offered an amendment. Does anyone have any questions about the amendment?
And everyone's got copies.
Just on the bill. Okay. So it doesn't appear there are any questions on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment passes. Now, to get back to your bill, I do think there are some questions about the bill and perhaps some questions for your testifiers, so if you're ready to take those. And I also have that we're going to have an additional speaker on the list. Is that true or no?
Madam Chair, we have had endorsements from the City of St. Paul, from the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce, and also from Life Science Alley, and I believe Linda here.
Okay, so if we want to take questions of the group here, and then if there are others that would like to step forward to testify, we could hear from them if they're interested. Representative Beard, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney, or one of the testifiers, maybe Mr. Olson, I noticed that Excel was one of your first in with a very generous donation from some other committees we serve on. I know they have a mandate to invest some funds from a renewable energy portfolio because of Prairie Island legislation. I'm just curious, did this money come from that, or did this money come from another pool of civic-minded responsibility or contributions that they do normally anyhow?
Madam Chairman, Representative Beard, that's a very good question. It did not come from the Renewable Development Fund or the sort of resources we were talking about the other day with respect to the initiative in renewable energy in the environment. This came from their foundation and from their, so it's not ratepayer directly set aside, it's from their foundation in the category of community development that you suggested.
Excellent. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dean Elmy.
If I could just add one more word. As I understand it, I think this is the largest donation Excel has given in the state of Minnesota to a not-for-profit. So it's a real signature gift on their part.
Thank you for that. I had a question, if I could just ask, and I think it's for somebody that's sitting at the table right now can probably handle it. One of the things we heard earlier this year from some testimony in this committee was that businesses start up and disappear rather quickly. Have you had that experience? I looked at your list of tenants, and you said you're at about 70% and hoping to be at 90. Could you address that a little bit for us?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, frankly, we have been in business for a little over a year. We had one tenant company called C2C start with us when the building opened, and they actually left the building in August of this year. But it really didn't have to do with the traditional sort of graduation approach. The lead investor in the company was or is from New Zealand and effectively wanted to take the assets of the business back with him as he moved back his family and others to his native country. So we did graduate a company, but not in a sort of traditional sense when you think about incubator facilities.
Okay, so based on your request for the $5 million, you're anticipating growth and being able to fill your building in the future.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. We have a rather unique facility, and also it obviously doesn't appeal to every prospect that we meet with. As I indicated, we're at a 70% occupancy rate right now, and that's a mix of lab space and office space and a little bit of warehouse space that we have available. But as I said earlier, we should be about between 88 and 92%
by mid-year, the July-August timeframe, due to some significant build-outs with existing tenants and then also new tenants that are coming to the building.
Thank you for that. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, are you ready?
Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to pass this House File 290 to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, Representative Mahoney has moved his bill and referred it to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Thank you for coming. And we do have another bill to be heard, and we can ask our next presenters to prepare. It'll be House File 34, Representative Kahn, and any speakers you have, and come to the table.
Before we started, this is for the members of the public. Those who may be interested in testifying, we have approximately 50 to 55 minutes left to the committee hearing. I expect to expect to vote on this today. But to the members of the public, if you would like to testify, make sure if you are not on the agenda to sign up to testify, and we will call you up as time allows. Representative Kahn, I want everyone to know that I want to set some ground rules because this is a bill that has a lot of people that want to talk about it, and as we have 55 minutes, I want to leave at least 5 minutes for voting. I'm going to allot 20 minutes for each, for those in support and those in opposition, and then about 5 or 10 minutes for questions. So I'm going to admonish the committee to be brief in your comments and quick in your answers. And that goes for the author and the testifiers. So with that, I would like to move Representative Kahn's bill without recommendation to the Committee on Finance. Now, there are some amendments in your packet. We may have to revisit the direction where it ends up if one of those amendments passes, which would take out the appropriation.
Chair, I have no amendments in my packet.
Well, I think they're going to be passed out then as we get to them. So, Representative Kahn, would you I'd like to take the amendments first or explain your bill first?
I guess I'd like to make some comments in the explanation of the bill and then we can go to the
please proceed.
Go to the amendments. House File 34 is a bill that would establish a state policy for stem cell research. And specifically, this is needed because the federal government has really failed us in this issue. We depend on the federal government to be a lead in bioscience in basic research in all fields. And because of this, states have moved into this blank space that's been left by the federal government's failure. And what's happened is that at least 8 states, California, Massachusetts, Illinois, Maryland, Connecticut, and New Jersey, and probably more as I speak, have passed legislation very similar to this bill, in a sense, setting state standards and so forth. You can read the excellent summary by House Research. You can also read the legislative findings in the bill, set out very specifically why this bill is needed. I'll have to start by saying that I'm very disappointed in what I've seen in the interpretation of the governor's statement, which I believe you have all received. And I'm frankly not sure where he stands. This was an issue I followed closely in the past election. I was surprised, frankly, when I heard, I actually heard the governor's statement when he made it, when his opponent challenged him to support stem cell research, and his answer was, you're not going to get an argument here. I completely agree with you. There was headlines. There's a headline in the, happened to be in the Pioneer Press, I'm sure it was another paper, saying, Pawlenty endorses stem cell research, governor abandoned some supporters by agreeing with Hatch. And my prediction is, judging by what happened in elections throughout the country and also throughout the state, that had, without that headline, I would guess that we would be looking at a different governor at this time. So I am disappointed because I do believe in the basic integrity of people, and I can't believe that the governor would make a political statement that he would then for election and would then move away from it as soon as the issue comes before the legislature. So, I guess when we have to discuss amendments, maybe we can have some understanding of where he stands. He seems to agree to the research on all stem cell lines except those that would be created in Minnesota. It seems to me to be a geographic rather than a moral line. And he also he seems to strongly disagree with the position that the current federal administration has happened. And so what this bill is to make it absolutely clear that embryonic stem cell research is consistent with Minnesota law. It provides for informed consent of patients undergoing infertility treatment and allowing the patients to decide on the use of their property, i.e. their embryos. And Mr. Chairman, I think testifiers will probably say a little bit more. I think you probably want to go to amendments before testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Yes, and I think a couple of amendments were passed out. And I'm going to start with my own personal one here that I always have disliked is legislative findings. It would be the AA070033 amendment, which deletes in the bill, page 1, line 9 through 23, and page 2, lines 1 through 19, are essentially legislative findings which put into law excess words. I don't necessarily know why I need to tell the Supreme Court or an appellate court or any other court the language that they need to listen to. So I have always not liked them. That's my reasoning for the 0033. I will give the author a chance to respond. I'm sorry, the author of the bill to respond, and then we'll take a couple questions if there are some.
Mr. Chairman, that's an issue that I will certainly leave to the will of the committee. I'll just say a few words of why I like legislative findings. I attended an NCSL conference once on the issue of legislative oversight, and they said that legislative findings are actually one of the very good ways that the legislature can tell future people who look at it what they intend, you know, court or something else. And I've actually had bills that I've written where the legislative findings have been referred to in court and have been useful because of that. I'd just like to point out, but, you know, as I said, I can't disagree with the chair's decision, chair's wish to take unnecessary verbiage out of the statute. I would like to point out, if they're going to disappear, I'd like to point out at least three items that I'd like to draw the committee's attention to, which I think are very important in the findings. One is on page 2.3 to 2.5, the importance of the biomedical industry is a critical and growing component, and the importance of this issue to the biomedical industry. We do not want to outsource major scientific research. I would think the testimony on the previous bill would just be applied to this bill. Then the next one I would like to point to is F 2.6 to 2.10, which talks about the fact that publicly funded research is open and accessible research. And that's a very good reason for having some public input into this issue. I'll just give an issue which is totally private and which we have no public input into, and that's in the issue of in vitro fertility, which and then the final one is statement H 215 to 219, which is the fact that we need to balance ethical and medical considerations in this issue, and it must be based on understanding the science associated with stem cell research and grounded in the thorough consideration of the ethical concerns and government policy. But, Mr. Chairman, I'll just leave that decision to the committee.
Well, thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for offering this amendment, because I think it helps begin to bring some clarity where I think the water has just been muddied. And I want to speak to that. I'm going to try to speak as respectfully as possible. But the assertion that somehow the governor or anybody who wears a conservative stripe, like I do proudly, is opposed to stem cell research is, I hope, not a deliberate obfuscation of our real position. Because we do not oppose... let me speak only for myself. Do not suppose stem cell research in any way, shape, or form, except for whenever we're touching the very foundations of life, when we're talking about embryonic stem cell research, and that issue alone is the one that touches the hot button, the third rail, if you will, in this whole discussion. And so for the assertion to be made that the governor has flip-flopped on this, is I don't know where to begin with my astonishment that such a statement could be made. Because to say that we support stem cell research is largely a very accurate statement. But the issue is what happens and how we deal with our cultural definitions of the foundations of life. And in this bill, there's a lot of talk about respect and balance for these twitchy issues and somehow composing a panel that's going to look into these things. And I'm glad you're taking that all out, because there is no legislative finding here. There's a great divide on this issue. However, the ability to move ahead with stem cell research that is technically feasible, is having proven results, there isn't, I don't think, a person around this table that would not get wholeheartedly behind that. In fact, the bills we've just heard, I think, illustrate our commitment to stem cell research and these high sciences that I think hold some great potential and some great possibility. So I'm going to tell you, I support this amendment. I support some more of them, too. But I just wanted to get that on the table. And for those of you watching at home, that this is not about stem cell research. And I'm really sorry the last campaign really kind of churned up the muck at the bottom and kind of clouded the issue. This is about human cloning, and this is about embryonic stem cell research, which is a very small portion of a very large and exciting field that we're dealing with here. I got a lot more to say about that, but I think I'll just make my opening remarks right there and let them stand for that. But please, this is not about stem cell research. This is about cloning and embryonic stem cell research. That is the line we're contemplating crossing here.
Thank you, Representative Beard. I would like to take just a quick minute to welcome the ninth grade class from Farmington Middle School. And I want to say that you have often, the middle schools come in to these committee hearings and get to listen to rather mundane, technical, dry, and you get stem cell. That's pretty cool. Happy to have you here. Hopefully one out of that class will be sitting at this table sometime in the future. Thank you for coming. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kahn. Chair Mahoney, I appreciate you bringing this amendment forward, but since we are addressing a specific section of the bill, I do have a couple of questions that I would like to ask before the amendment potentially takes it out. And I think I'll start with, if you would indulge me just a couple of...
I will indulge you. The amendment is going to take it out, so... We are all...
If it passes.
Yes.
Yeah. We all need to
we
be...
We have a second chance.
We need to be informed before right. We vote, though. I guess, Representative Kahn, the section I would like to focus in on relates to page 1.2, and it reads in part that stem cell research could lead to unprecedented treatments. And I'm wondering if you can clarify that for me a little bit, because I know there's a difference between embryonic stem cell research and adult stem cell research, and it's my understanding that adult stem cell research has led to at least 72 treatments, So I'm wondering if you could talk about that, and then also if you could talk to me about exactly how many treatments embryonic stem cell research has delivered, since the language says could lead to unprecedented, and I'm wondering if you could expand upon that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Khan, briefly.
I think we're going to have testifiers speak to that, to that issue. I think that it's a difference between, there's a difference between basic research and applied research. Very hard to, you know, and so I'd rather let the experts tell you what they think the potential of this research is.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney. For my research, I'm seeing that there's been zero treatment, so maybe your testifiers could explain that. And I do have one other question just based on the article in the paper yesterday on a section of the amendment. In section G, 2.13 in particular, raises significant ethical and policy concerns, which I believe that this touches on the very ethical decision-making that probably the maximum that we ever get in the legislature. But in the paper, I'm just wondering if you could maybe explain your quote to me a little bit. You talked about the governor. You said he's going in the same false direction with the idea that you put restrictions on it that have no ethical background. So I'm confused about whether you think there is ethical background in this or not, because your quote on the paper leads me to believe that you yourself don't think there's an ethical element to this. And if you could perhaps, I'm guessing you were misquoted or something in the article.
No, I believe that my bill comes down on the right ethical side. Let's start that. Let me start by telling a story on August 9th, 2001, when President Bush came down with his declaration on stem cell research. There were, I don't know how many other people, but there happened to be two people in the state office building on that day. One of them, previous older legislators certainly know, Representative Kilkuski, and me, and we had a conversation about it's as people here, older legislators know, we've got to be, if you're looking at a pro-life, pro-choice issue, we've got to be on the opposite ends of the spectrum. The only thing we ever agreed on in this whole subject was that to both of us, President Bush's statement and decision made no sense. To Kilkuski, it made no sense from the moral parameters that he saw were important, and to me it made no sense from the scientific parameters I saw were important. So the answer, there are, the position in place is something that sets a different ethical line for many, you know, for many people, and what I am simply saying is that the ethical lines drawn by one person's religious convictions should not be the basis of state policy.
Representative Norton?
Chair Mahoney, members, Representative Khan, I too like legislation that is concise, and I guess I also would agree that this is quite, it explains a lot, and I appreciate this as background. I do question whether it needs to be in legislation, and I'm wondering, just from the author's perspective, if this piece comes out, you feel that your bill still maintains enough strength in it to move forward?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Just a philosophical difference on the issue of legislative findings, which we'll probably go through many times.
It's a common thing with Representative Khan and myself. See no more questions. All those in favor of the amendment, let me make sure I'm getting the right one, 0033, in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Amendment 33 is adopted. I have one other amendment, and that will change the nature of the bill dramatically. It is the A070034, which takes out the appropriations. It's an open appropriation. I think any appropriation, although this is a money committee, this is not a money committee, and I probably shouldn't do it here. We're just trying to move this bill kind of in order to get it to the next policy committee. So unless there's an objection to taking this out, if there's any objections, I will pull the amendment because I don't like to do money in a policy committee. But I just thought that this amendment would make it simpler to move the bill.
Mr. Chair, where is it going next?
if this bill goes in, if this amendment gets adopted, then it goes to higher ed finance, higher ed and workforce finance, which is also a policy and a finance committee. Versus if this does not go on, it goes to finance, and then I'm not sure where it goes after that.
Mr. Chair, for clarification, and the motion that we're laboring under at the moment is that it goes without recommendation to finance committee.
Correct.
If this is adopted, you'll amend that motion?
To without recommendation to higher ed workforce.
Thank you for the clarification.
Any questions? Representative Norton.
Representative Mahoney, I go back to the same question I had before. Because I see this as perhaps more of a philosophical piece of legislation, and it does have that open line for appropriations. Are you comfortable moving forward with just the philosophical statement at this point?
Yes, I am. In fact, it's more in with my general philosophy of I don't like to specify appropriations to the University of Minnesota. I assume there'll be some large research appropriation or bioscience research appropriation, and to other institutions, and that can be decided there. So it's fine with it.
Any other questions? All in favor of Amendment 0034, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment passes. So I would like to amend my recommendation for to pass without recommendation to the Higher Ed Workforce Development Committee. I think that's the way I have to do it. And if not, we'll hear about it. All in favor? Is there a question?
Are you taking other amendments at this time as well?
Well, let's just move the bill to where it needs to be, and then if you want to, we'll have a short discussion about whether you want to hear testifiers, break microphones, or take amendments. All in favor of moving this bill without recommendation?
Are we voting on the bill right now?
No, moving, changing the recommendation. No, we don't have to vote on it. That's right. You're right. Okay. So, Representative Kahn, would you like to take the rest of the amendments at the moment?
I guess, as I see it, the amendments largely come from Representative Pepin. Assuming that we'll have time, I think we'd be better off by listening to the testifiers on both sides.
Representative Pepin, would you prefer to hear the testifiers, or would you prefer to hear the amendments? Mine were relatively, I thought, non-controversial, not a lot of discussion to them.
It doesn't matter,
you need to have your amendments will be heard before we vote on this.
I have the time. I would hope it would be your intent not to adjourn the meeting when the testifiers are done because it's 11:30, because this is a very important issue and we need to take the time.
We need to get that done. And I will try to get these all the testifiers in, all the amendments in, and voted on today. So having said that, I would ask the testifiers to come to the table. Do you have your testifiers?
Dr. Mary Serpo from the University.
Good morning. Just so that we can accommodate everyone, I just want you to know that briefer is always better in a committee like this when we only have about a half hour, 35 minutes left.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Chair Mahoney, for having me here today to talk. I am Mary Furpo. As you said, I am from the University of Minnesota. I recently moved here from California. My research within the Stem Cell Institute and the Division of Endocrinology in the Department of Medicine at the University of Minnesota is focused on diabetes research and understanding the disease and coming up with some kind of cure for the disease. My training is in bone marrow transplantation, and I was interested to hear just now that 72 adult stem cell diseases treatments have been developed. With very few exceptions, those are all based on bone marrow transplantation, which includes just one type of stem cell, possibly two. So this is my background in training, and I was asked to join the ranks of diabetes research because bone marrow transplantation has been such a successful therapy in the past, but adult stem cells are not actually useful for many diseases, and there is not a known stem cell to be able to cure diabetes. This bill, in my opinion, it seems to actually be stating a support for all types of stem cell research, and if that is the purpose of it, then I'm all for it. I think that all types of stem cell research needs to go on together. And I'll just, as a short story, I'll tell you, a lot of people here ask me why would I come to the state of Minnesota to do stem cell research from the state of California, where I was the one scientist who developed embryonic stem cells before the president's deadline of August 9th, 2001, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. At that point, I had two of the cell lines that were derived at that point, and I've also derived 11 more embryonic stem cell lines since that time under more careful conditions that are more appropriate to be used for therapeutic interventions. Based on the fact that the University of Minnesota has the world's first stem cell institute and groundbreaking cutting-edge research in diabetes transplantation, although no adult stem cell therapies yet, I came here so that I had the opportunity to collaborate with the scientists working on adult stem cells and embryonic stem cells, as well as the diabetes researchers that are at the University of Minnesota. I left California knowing that I was coming to somewhat of an unknown, but the University of Minnesota had convinced me before I came here that they fully support all types of stem cell research based on current scientific knowledge and had set up policies and ethical oversight that satisfied me that this work would be able to go forward here. Having listened to some of your discussion, I just want to tell you that the work that we're doing is not taken lightly, and that the purpose of the research in my lab is to try and find a cure for diabetes. And we are using all of the resources available to us. However, I spend a fair amount of my time trying to find private sources of funding for the research that we think is the most, using the cell lines that are most clinically useful in my lab, that we have to find non-federal and, based on the policies of the university, non-state funds to move forward. So the university has made this possible and has supported my research to date, and we've been able to move forward. But the funding for this type of research is very small compared to the rest of the research. And I just want to say that in support of the federal funding for research, that the other part of my lab that works with the same type of cells and the same type of research is eligible without any restrictions for federal and state funding, and that this research, we actually were tapped from the National Institutes of Health based on our extensive knowledge and early involvement in this field in training people from all over the world, from Minnesota, from the United States, and from other countries in using embryonic stem cells. So although the work is very similar, some of the research I do has to be done with completely restricted funding, while the rest of the research that I do has completely unrestricted funding. And we are, in fact, in the Stem Cell Institute at University of Minnesota, a resource for international researchers trying to acquire this technology. That's all I have to say. You can ask me science questions. I'm happy to answer them.
Are there any science questions for the testifier? Representative Pepin.
Dr. Furpo, Mr. Chair and Dr. Furpo, I do would like to follow up with the same question that I asked Representative Hahn. You testified that, to your knowledge, the adult stem cells that only come from bone marrow, and I'm no scientist.
Not only, but the majority of those treatments that you're talking about, with very few exceptions, are based on bone marrow transplant.
Okay,
there are several diseases that can be cured by bone marrow transplant.
Okay.
Not diabetes, however.
Okay. I guess my question would be then, and correct me if I'm wrong, how long has private research been going on regarding cloning and embryonic stem cell research? I believe it's like 20 years. And then if you could just answer, based on the research that's been done, how many cures have been, how many treatments have been found with embryonic stem cell research?
Well, I think that you're trying to paint me into a corner here, so let me give you the information.
I don't mean to. This isn't.
So embryonic stem cells have been available since 1989. Mouse embryonic stem cells have been used to cure mouse diseases for many, many years. We haven't had human embryonic stem cells to use for therapeutic applications since 1998. The other thing that I should mention is that it's not that FDA has not seen any applications for clinical trials. But I want you to think about something else, that the first treatments that come from embryonic stem cells are not going to be transplantation therapies, because this is a model where we can use to understand the development of human biology and human adult organs as well, that this system will be used to test therapies that can be used that are not transplantation. So no transplantation therapies in humans have ever been done using embryonic stem cells. Many, many mice have been cured, however. The type of work that could be done with these embryonic stem cells could be applied for transplantation therapy, for testing the toxicity of pharmaceutical agents without doing research on human beings, and also reducing the number of animals that could be used for the research, and also could be used to test human systems so that we can find novel therapies not based on transplantation. So in that sense, there is much knowledge that has been gained. Given the very small amount of money that we've had, we could move forward much more quickly if there were fewer restrictions, however.
I have a follow-up question. Since I've got the scientists on board, Mr. Chair, if I could ask. Dr. Furpo, could you explain the process of somatic cell nuclear transplantation, commonly known as cloning?
Can you do it within about a minute? Because
okay,
we have one other question, and if I'm going to try to be fair to the opposition, I've only got about 20 minutes.
I think I can do this in 30 seconds. So cloning is one thing; nuclear transfer is another thing. Cloning is replicating a human being. This can be done by creating identical twins, by separating cells of an embryo, or by transferring a nucleus and creating an embryo that's implanted in a uterus. The technology of nuclear transfer is removing a pronucleus from an unfertilized oocyte and replacing it with the nucleus of another cell. But this is not necessarily cloning. This is a technique that can be used for transferring nuclei from one cell to another. It doesn't necessarily require transferring nuclei from an egg to an egg. It's just an egg is actually quite large and easy to manipulate. But cloning is replicating a human being with the exact genetic makeup and can be done several ways.
Thank you.
Representative Burns?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a science-based question. And first I want to say I support stem cell research. I support embryonic stem cell research. Kevin Egan at Harvard is showing how we can do that without destruction of the embryo. We have new, very recent news about amniotic fluid holding embryonic stem cells, and that's
oh,
good.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Amniotic fluid does not hold embryonic stem cells.
Okay. Well, I stand corrected then.
Happens around here.
Thank you. Thank you. And I want to address it from the science basis, and specifically the National Academies of Science, who I think both of you, who are both scientists, would agree is our premier independent, objective group of scientists in the country. And I think even the scientists would agree that safeguards are necessary. And if you're reading from their Understanding Stem Cell packet, it talks about how scientists and society must consider ethical implications of stem cell research. It goes on to say that in 2005, the National Academies published guidelines for scientists to encourage responsible and ethical sensitive conduct in their work. It goes on to say, however, that is not legally binding, meaning that a scientist could choose or not choose to abide by these ethical considerations. And again, it's a nonpartisan group of scientists who just want to be ethical in how they do their research.
I'm familiar with this.
Sure.
Guidelines.
And it kind of leads me into my next point, which is, it was really going to come down to the derivation of where the embryos come from. In 2005, we all know about the Stem Cell Research Enhancement Act that was passed through Congress. There was a strong bipartisan support, and that had a number of protections in where the stem cells came from. And it really limited that. This bill doesn't have any limits that I can see on where the tissue comes from. And I want to say that that was pretty bipartisan, not only Senator Bill Frist and Senator Trent Lott.
What restrictions are you talking about? I'm sorry.
Specifically, it said all human embryonic stem cells used for research must come from embryos that were created only for fertility treatments.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
It's a research on where they, it's a...
That would eliminate nuclear transfer.
Yes. Actually, I don't know that, but that's what you say. I agree. But that was very bipartisan, and not only those Republican senators, but Senator Barbara Boxer, Senator Mark Dayton, Senator Russ Feingold, Senator Dianne Feinstein, Ted Kennedy, John Kerry, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton all supported that bill, which placed some limitations on where the embryos can come from. And this bill doesn't have any such limitation. And so I kind of have a two-part question. That seemed to be pretty much a bipartisan consensus 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. And it's not in here now. And secondly...
I'm trying to find the science in that question, but
sure.
But I think that maybe someone else could address that.
Yeah.
If there's any other questions for me, then
yeah.
I'd be happy.
Well, and I'll give you the second part of the question. Would it make sense to include in this law a requirement that the state of Minnesota abide by those objective, independent guidelines from the national academies, which are, I believe, being updated as we speak now, but they're, I think, agreed upon.
Before the testifier says, I don't know that that's a fair question for a scientist. It might be a more fair question for a legislator.
But can I just say, I think that in legislation, my understanding, I'm not a politician, that generally those types of things are sort of hammered out in a committee where there's some compromise being made. But so I'm not really sure what the basis of that was. I doubt very much it was a scientific decision. But that bill is actually different in that it allocates funding. And I think up until a couple of minutes ago, this one maybe did, but too, but doesn't anymore. So I think that there's a pretty big difference in what that bill was trying to accomplish and what this one was. That's my political understanding. And I'm also new to this state, but I'm pretty sure that's true.
Representative Kahn, would you care to answer the question?
I think actually Dr. Serko gave a good answer to it. I think you might want to put restrictions on funding that you don't have in general policy, and again, you know, you have to look at what the implications of the policy are. But the problem is that the president's restrictions go far beyond that. And the question is, what sense does it make in what line?
Yeah. I'm just asking if the National Academy is you know, reputable enough for us to use their standards.
I think we want to be hesitant about writing them into law. And I think what we would expect is that the review committee that we refer to in this bill would be very much bound by them in terms of looking at, or very much influenced by them in terms of looking at approved experiments.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. I'm going to now ask for the opposition to come down. We're already well over where I kind of hoped to. I will call you back to the before we vote on it.
Okay. If I could have two people who could say one sentence each.
Certainly. One sentence.
Just by saying, okay. One is Jackie Stevenson, who's the vice chair of the Parkinson's Association. And I think she just wants to give her just a statement in support of the bill.
Thank you. I'm Jackie Hunt Christensen. I am the vice president of the Parkinson Association of Minnesota. I'm here today as a person who's had Parkinson's for 10 years. And you want one sentence. We patients are running out of patience. We need a cure.
Thank you.
And I believe Ms. Christensen has a statement which can probably be... We can probably get typed and text out. And then the other person is Mary Sanders. Is she?
Okay.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Linda Sandvig. I'm with Life Science Alex. I've been called a lot of other things. So anyway, I just want to indicate our association support for House File 34. Actually, we kind of like the legislative findings that incorporates a lot of our testimony on looking at the need for investments in research and looking at how that spins out as far as technology. Thank you.
On the list of points, Chris Liefeld, Executive Director of Minnesota Catholic Conference. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Liefeld. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Chairman Mahoney, members of the committee. My name is Chris Liefeld, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference. The Minnesota Catholic Conference is a public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm here to speak in opposition to House File 34 because of the moral and ethical implications involved in the use of embryonic stem cells. Catholic moral teaching on this issue is very clear. Every human life from the first moment of existence until natural death deserves our respect and protection. Human life has intrinsic dignity, not only a relative or instrumental value. Thus, every living member of the human species, including the human embryo, must be treated with respect due to a human person. Catholic morality regarding respect for human life rejects all deliberate involvement with the direct killing of human embryos for research or any other purpose. Such killing is gravely and intrinsically wrong, and no promised beneficial consequences can lessen that wrong. Regardless of the potential medical benefits, it is wrong to rely upon the destruction of some human beings for the possible benefit of others. At the same time, we contend that the use of stem cells from adults, amniotic fluid, and umbilical cord blood continues to hold great promise without destroying human life. We would therefore urge the bill's authors to consider amending this bill to exclude the use of embryonic stem cells. We believe very strongly that human embryos are not disposable biological material and that decisions regarding biotechnology and human experimentation be based on respect for the inherent dignity of human life from its very beginning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Liefeld.
Can I just ask one clarifying question?
Sure.
Is there a position on in vitro fertilization that the Catholic Church has?
I have to. I honestly don't know that question.
Okay.
That
asked. Thank you.
Tom Pritchard, President of Minnesota Family Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Pritchard. I'm president of the Minnesota Family Council. The Minnesota Family Council opposes this bill for its authorized use of taxpayer dollars for embryonic stem cell research for a couple of reasons. First of all, we believe it's ethically, morally wrong to destroy human life for laboratory experiments. Let's be clear, the human embryo is a human being. It's not a potential human being. As Dr. Bradley Payton's textbook, Human Embryology, stated, it's the penetration of the ovum by a spermatozoan and the resulting mingling of the nuclear material each brings to the union that constitute the culmination of the process of fertilization and marks the initiation of the life of a new individual. Beyond that, I think there's also a reason why those of you who don't believe or aren't persuaded by the ethical arguments should not support this bill. It's fundamentally a poor use of taxpayers' dollars to use it on embryonic stem cell research. Why? Because it authorizes the use of research dollars to an area of stem cell research which has garnered no tangible benefit, embryonic stem cell research. All the successes, developments of treatment to help people have been in the adult stem cell umbilical cord areas. Not a single embryonic stem cell has ever been tested in a human being for any disease. There's been no progress in experiments using animals since embryonic stem cells came on the scene in 1981. According to Stuart Newman, professor of cell biology and anatomy at the New York Medical College, there has been essentially no progress in curing or even palliating a disabling condition for which mouse models existed, such as diabetes, spinal cord injury, Parkinson's, and so forth. Also, Harvard medical professor Charles Bacanti says, although the embryonic has been shown to have the potential to run into virtually any cell type found within the body. No studies have demonstrated the controlled generation of a uniform cell type. In tissue engineering, embryonic stem cells may not be the way to go. On the other hand, there's been a lot of success in the adult and cord cell research. According to the periodical Nature Biotechnology, one estimate is that there are currently over 80 therapies and around 300 clinical trials underway using such cells. We believe that with limited tax dollars available, you would be best, it would be most appropriate to use this where you can have the best results and where there aren't the moral and ethical questions, and that, of course, is in the adult and cord stem cell research. Remember, the issue isn't whether embryonic stem cell research will be banned or won't be funded through private sources, but whether you will use public dollars, tax monies, for these initiatives. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for the testifier? Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Pritchard, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pritchard. So is your definition of useful scientific research only research that actually results in a tangible therapy, or do you also understand that there are some benefits to research of understanding how things work, at least initially, before they... I'm just curious about your position there, because it sounds like all you're focused on is tangible results, and I'd like to hear the response.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen. No, I recognize that there's usefulness to explore other areas, but I think clearly in an area fraught with significant moral and ethical questions, and frankly, if you're going to get the best bang for the buck, in a sense, with this area of research, it's clearly not in the embryonic stem cell research. So we think it's not appropriate. If you're going to use the money in this area, it should be where you're going to get the most benefit, and we think that's it's well clear where that is.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I understand that there's a moral objection here, and I get that piece. I would just suggest that in terms of what we understand about the tangible results, we ought to listen to scientists on that and let them make those decisions about that. So that would be, I guess, not a comment, not a question.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen raised a good point, and again, I just want to speak to that for a moment, because science for the sake of science is very important to what a research university like ours does, or what we're trying to do with the Mayo Clinic, with the Genome Project, and so on. And again, I don't think any of us have any problem with that happening. In fact, we celebrate it. Lord, we spend hundreds of millions a year, and we've just had some of these debates around this table within the last week about supporting research, a lot of which is just science for science's sake, because those are like the basic building blocks that allow therapies to begin to be developed, or even people that are way smarter than me to sit around and think about potential therapies. It's just that we're saying in this bill, the problem that some of us are having is that we're using taxpayer dollars to go into a brave new world, if I can use that phrase, that maybe some of us think we want to hold back and just wait for a little bit on. So just to be clear, if science for science's sake is something we can all get our arms around, but not any science anywhere, anytime, particularly taxpayer-funded, and I believe just my closing comment is, there are no prohibitions against private dollars funding this particular science for science's sake. If somebody's conscience is clear and they want to invest their fortune doing that, have at it, and we'll see how things turn out. Thanks for the chances to speak to that.
I'm glad that question was in there. Representative Bunn?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Pritchard, just real quickly, following up on a question asked previously, is it the position of the Minnesota Family Council then that they do not support in vitro fertilization, which inevitably in the United States produces human embryos that are then discarded and destroyed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, mm-hmm. We haven't really gotten into that issue as an organization, but obviously that it's problematic when it gets when you're destroying human embryos.
Representative Winkler, did you have a question, or would you prefer to wait for Representative Kahn to come back?
I know.
Thank you. No other questions? I'm going to call down Kirk Allison. Dr. Kirk Allison. And members, I think we'll probably be going a few minutes over here, so but just keep in mind, just keep in mind that the longer we go over, the less time the chair has for lunch.
It's like we don't eat.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'm Kirk Allison, a PhD MS. I'm the director of the program in Human Rights and Health in the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota. I've titled my remarks Stem Cell Policy, Balancing Ethics and Science, and I will read them for purposes of economy and make a couple of interjections in the midst of them. Chair Mahoney, Vice Chair Norton, and Ranking Member Beard, and distinguished committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to address you regarding House File 34, and I also want to express my appreciation for Representative Kahn.
Doctor, if I remember right, your written remarks were 8 pages long?
There was a lot of footnotes, and the parts that I'm going to read are much more abbreviated.
Okay,
and I'm going to skip over the block quotes. I appreciate that. In this, I'm speaking for myself rather than for my institution. In matters of stem cell research, given the burden of disease, the stakes are high for patients, families, scientific integrity, the economy, the university, and for what the United Nations Declaration on Human Cloning has called human dignity. Many areas of stem cell research are unproblematic given informed consent, and several are yielding therapeutic fruit. However, crucial ethical areas arise regarding the disposition of human embryos, the creation of embryos for research, whether by IVF, somatic cell nuclear transfer, which is cloning, or from fetal tissue after abortion. And with regard to the terminology, one thing that frustrates me almost to no end is the semantic dissimulation. I would like to point out that on February 26th at the University of Minnesota is an international conference. The title of the conference is Creating Stem Cells by Research Cloning, Scientific, Ethical, Legal, and Policy Challenges, and it concerns human embryonic stem cells. So if one goes through PubMed, goes through the literature, you'll find the creation and derivation of stem cell lines from a cloned mouse embryo, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we should be clear on our terminology. These contexts strike at the core as they raise the question, to what extent are we willing to instrumentalize human life and what will be sacrificed in the process? Jürgen Habermas, who is the philosopher of the secular public square, quotes, to the extent that the creation and destruction of embryos for purposes of medical research are extended and normalized, the cultural perception of antenatal human life will change too, blunting our moral sensibility for the limits of cost-benefit analysis in general. In short, long-term demand curves are built in successive steps as forms of human life become routinely disposable means. Now, my concerns with the proposed legislation are both principled and pragmatic. These include, one, the ethical model espoused, two, the issue of limits, three, and oversight. I speak in opposition to the bill in its current form and the expansion it proposes. The normative framework the bill espouses states that public policy on stem cell research must balance ethical and medical considerations to ensure that researchers have the tools necessary to fulfill the promise of stem cell research. The logic of balancing model manifests in a former research initiative, and I think some historical perspective, although not every element applies, is useful. Here's a quote from a long-term medical study. Quote, the gains to medical knowledge derived from the horizontal long-term study of illness and health are only just beginning to be realized. As public health workers accumulate experience and skill in this type of study, not only should the number of such studies increase, but a maximum of information will be gained from the efforts expended. Now, this remark concludes an article called 20 Years of Following Experience in a Long-Range Medical Study, found in Public Health Reports. It is halfway through the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, that tracked disease progression for 40 years without treatment until it was exposed and ended in 1972. And despite the Nuremberg principles emerging after 1945 in the eyes of successive research teams, the study produced important data in their view and was justified in balancing of ethical, medical, social, and public health considerations. And the reference to the article is there. It's online. While our intent is to develop, not deny, treatment for society to be healthy, scientific practice, commercial interests, and even academic prestige must be subject to rather than balanced against ethics.
Doctor, in the sense of time, I'm going to ask you to hurry through your remarks and conclude because we will be running over. I understand, and I've looked at your, we can all read your written remarks. If you have some concluding remarks.
Okay, I'll just put up a couple of points. Again, as some of the other testifiers have had, the bill precludes ethical considerations categorically excluding any source of stem cells. I think that should be a very real concern. And it really provides unlimited license for the production of new embryos in research. Secondly, it contradicts the United Nations Declaration on Human Cloning, which calls all member nations to adopt all measures necessary to prohibit all forms of cloning, both research and reproductive. Thirdly, it does not address the burden of oocyte collection for IVF cloning that's born exclusively by women, which is also cited in that same UN declaration. Fourthly, it makes the statement that for oversight, the research involving derivation and use of stem cells shall be reviewed by an IRB board. However, within 45 Code of Federal Regulations 46, titled Human Subject Protection, a great deal of this research actually does not fall under the mandate of the legislation which establishes the board, nor the criterion of evaluation involved in human subjects protection. In fact, human subject protection concerns data derived from an individual or from an identified source. Now, at the point that an embryo is anonymized or the gametes are anonymized, this no longer falls under the IRB. And I talked with a number of people in the IRB office at the University of Minnesota, and they were frankly a bit befuddled about what their role in such cases should be. And the reason why is that the mechanisms in place for criterion and judgment do not apply to those situations.
Well, thank you, Doctor. We appreciate your comments. Representative Pepin, you had an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the 3-2 amendment, but I do need to amendment based on the other amendments that have already passed.
Members, we had a couple other testifiers that wanted to speak, and I'm going to take the license as the chair and ask these testifiers if they have anything that has not been addressed already.
Yes, I do.
Then I'll give you 30 seconds to go over your new things.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jenny Holscher. I'm a legislative associate with Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. One thing that I would like to mention here significantly that hasn't been mentioned is that if we go ahead with embryonic stem cell research, where are we going to get the embryos from? There are only 400,000 frozen embryos available. Only 11,000 of those are available for medical research. The rest of them are set aside for fertility in vitro fertilization. That means that women have to donate and have their eggs harvested. And just to give you some statistics, it varies based on the number of eggs needed. Anywhere from 17 to 100 human eggs are needed for to create a various stem cell line. I've got results from three different scientists that I'd be happy to share with you. And that would require that anywhere from 29 million to 170 million women to donate their eggs. Now, the 2000 census said that there are only 60 million women of childbearing age.
Thank you for that new information. Did you have something that you wanted to add?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andrea Rao, and I also represent Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. I do think it's disappointing that in such a significant issue that time is cut so short. We would have appreciated having more time to have something to say. I would just simply like to say that while we may all argue on the exactly what status an embryo takes, I think we can all agree that we once were embryos, and if we destroy embryos, every one of you would not have been here. You would not have that opportunity, and I think that is something to remember. So whether you consider an embryo life or potential life or how you designate it, it is who we are. Thank you.
Thank you, and I do apologize for not having more time. Representative Pepin, you had an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The 3-2 amendment, and to get it in proper shape, I would like to remove sections 1.1 through 1.3, as well as 1.10 to 1.11, because that was passed in your previous amendment, Mr. Chair. Oh, it is 1.13. Okay. So the only part that would be remaining would be the 1.4 through the 1.9?
You want 1.10 in there, too, I think.
I think that already passed. Didn't that already pass?
No.
Okay. Nope. Yes, and I do want, we've got the...
1.1 is
today. Yes, you're right. I'm sorry, maybe I should have had the staff read it. So it's 1.2, 1.3, and then 1.11, 12, and 13? That's in the proper shape. And you can all read it in front of you. Basically, with this, the effect of this change, it would be that embryonic stem cells would only be permitted for research if the destruction of human embryos isn't necessary to extract them. And then the second part would be it would also delete the portion of the bill that allows embryonic cloning or somatic cell nuclear transplantation. That's the otherwise known as therapeutic cloning, research cloning, embryo cloning. And I just want to provide a little bit of additional information. We talked a lot about, from different groups, about the first part of it, the destruction of human embryos. That's pretty easy to understand. But I do, as far as the cloning legislation part, I just want to point out that there are also pro-abortion groups that are suspicious of the, well, maybe suspicious is a word putting into their mouth, but that are leery of this legislation. And I do want to just take a little bit of excerpt from a statement of Judy Norsegian from the exec director of Our Bodies, Ourselves. This is read before Congress last year, and that is a typically a pro-abortion group.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure there are pro-abortion groups.
That would be a good point.
I would beg to differ that there are pro-abortion groups, but... this, I just want to read what she had to say, just for some folks to something for folks to think about. Ms. Norsegian says, we have serious concerns about a small subset of ESC research known as somatic cell nuclear transplant, and more commonly referred to as research cloning, therapeutic cloning, or embryo cloning. We believe that our country should follow the prudent example already adopted by Canada and place a moratorium on all SCNT research until better safety data are available for some of the drugs used during multiple egg extraction procedures. She goes on to quote, let's see where I have it here, a study by the Bedford Stem Cell Institute from consent to participate in a study involving egg donation for stem cell research. And she said that it's not only the women undergoing the procedure who may be at risk from ovarian hyperstimulation, it's also the embryos that may be at risk. I could go on and on and on, but my point of reading this is that this is now this is an important issue. I think this deserves more than I mean, this, we've had 1 hour to discuss this, Chair Mahoney, and I would like to discuss it to give it the amount of time it deserves. I'm trying to go quickly here, but my point is that this is not just a simple issue of looking for diseases. I have a mother that has Parkinson's disease. She's had it for more than 10 years. I've had a father-in-law who has MS who's had it for about that amount of time. I very much support adult embryonic stem cell testing, but my concern is with the unproven. We've had doctors testify that we've had zero treatments so far with embryonic stem cell research, and that in addition to this cloning stuff that even pro-abortion groups are leery of leads me to believe that we should remove that part from the bill. And so, members, I would ask you to support me in my amendment, the 3-2 amendment.
Any questions for Representative Bunn? For Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I'm not sure there's a question, but a clarifying question. What you have starting on 1.4 in your amendment, and this is just a technical issue, it says just delete the word human. I assume you meant to delete the word human and everything that followed behind it. So is this,
I think it's just, maybe staff can help me with this, I think it's just the second human.
But aren't you replacing most of the rest of this entire paragraph with the paragraph that you have there? So there seems to be a problem with the writing of the amendment. That's what mine is raising.
I think it's on line 1.10 fills out the deletion of the rest of that stuff.
Yes.
Ah, okay. Got it. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Does that answer your question, Representative Fun?
Yes.
Representative Kahn, did you have some comments on the amendment?
I do oppose the amendment, but one part of it totally puzzled me, and that's the lines 110 to 113, where I have a this is something which occurs in almost every state law, and I'm really, which is the prohibition on sale of.
I think 110 through 113. Did I hear you wrong? Because we've already deleted that out.
I just opposed the amendments. I think that there are, we could again get into a real issue of the of what SENT is and the kinds of things in which it's necessary and the ability to treat a person without involving their immune system, without antagonizing their immune system, is one of the very high promises of that. There is specific language in some other laws that specifically prohibits cloning, and that's something that could be put in at some point if someone would want it. That's specifically in the specific language in the New Jersey law, specific language, and I think from what I've heard, that would be something that would be easily prohibited by the Institutional Review Board. That at some later point, if someone would want to put the prohibition of cloning similar to the New Jersey law and several other laws, I would have no objection to that.
Representative Winkler, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to commend the people, the testifiers on both sides of this issue. I do see this as a moral question, fundamentally. I don't think it's a question of science on one side versus morals and ethics on the other, but rather a question of, is the potential benefit to alleviate human suffering on one side worth the cost or the potential question of cost on the other? And so I hope we don't get into a discussion of science versus ethics, because I think there are strong ethical arguments on both sides and very deeply felt convictions. So putting Representative Beard talked and acknowledged that the potential benefits of pure scientific research on one side should be balanced with the potential cost and controversy, in a sense, on the other side. So my question for Representative Kahn is to better understand the sources of the embryonic stem cells. The language in the bill talks about unused embryos from fertility treatments. And the question is, are there other sources for embryonic stem cells besides unused embryos from fertility treatments? And then secondly, what would otherwise happen to the embryos that were unused following fertility treatments?
Well, the major source that we are talking about are the unused embryos from fertility treatments. You know, I'd rather have scientists talk about the SCNT transfer, which is probably much more in the future. And the answer is that those embryos are discarded at some point. They're discarded either through the ravages of time, they're discarded through decisions. One of the problems we have is that we have absolutely no regulation of in vitro fertility transplantation, all of which involves the destruction of embryos. In fact, one of the things that was very disappointing to me is that I don't remember when everyone got in, this only affects the legislators who are here in 2004, when I tried to put an amendment on the House floor requesting that the Department of Health and Human Services consider drafting legislation related to the regulation of in vitro fertilization. This amendment was based on the proposal of Bush's own Committee on Assisted Reproductive Technology, and it limited scientific research on human embryos to no more than 10 to 14 days after fertilization, and when stem cells are actually isolated at about 5 days, and it was unanimously rejected by every Republican in the House. Well, I don't remember exactly which of you were there in 2004, but there were a lot of people who voted against that. And, you know, in vitro fertilization raises, and that's why I think Representative Thiessen's question was so relevant, raises really all of the issues that we're discussing now. And we have never looked at it as a state society, as a federal society, and I would hate to see what the discussion about that would be now at this
at this time.
Mr. Chair, could I just follow up
and
with
so
the comment to that?
Representative Kahn, in the interest of time, could we please keep moving?
Okay. So, Representative Kahn, I understand your answer being that the primary source is unused embryos from fertility treatments and that otherwise that is essentially an unregulated or the destination of those embryos at any rate is not regulated directly by state law.
And we know that some of them, for example, some of the fertility clinics have a continued charge for storage, and we do know that as soon as the person...
So that was a yes?
Not a yes.
Mr. Chair, I heard a yes.
Thank you.
They will be destroyed. They will be saved. The question is, will they be destroyed by just deteriorating or destroyed purposely? And the answer is both.
Representative North.
Representative Mahoney, I guess I just wanted to clarify. Everything in your bill is about informed consent.
Yes.
When a person goes into an infertility clinic, they know and they have time to think about whether this is what they want to do with their leftover eggs and you know, whatever. And I just wondered if it precludes donations of unused eggs that a person might have. And as I'm reading this, it doesn't specifically say that it can't, but it sounds like you have to go through infertility clinics to donate them, perhaps. I just wondered if it kind of tying to that.
Is that part of the amendment, or would that be better asked after the amendment?
That can be fine. That's fine. I was just tying it to Representative Wigler's comment.
We'll come back to you. Are there any other questions on the amendment? 0032.
Chair Mahoney. I've been informed by Ms. Newman that the intention of the amendment makes, there's a little mistake in the amendment of what I was trying to do.
Okay.
The amendment left out a section that needs to be deleted, so the actual amendment should delete everything after the of and then insert this on 2.22, because the way I had it, it would not have deleted those last two lines.
What line of your amendment? On 1.4.
Yeah, my amendment.
Could the staff read what we need to do here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kevin. Sorry. On line 1.4 of the amendment, the amendment to the amendment would say, page 2, line 22, delete everything after of, and we'd cross out the human and insert than the rest of the language, and I believe that gets to the intent of what Representative Pepin is trying to accomplish. So in the bill, it would be page 2, line 22, you delete the words on the line after of. Further on in the amendment, it takes away lines 23 through 28 of that section, and then the new language is inserted there.
Does everyone understand that?
I have a clarifying question, if I could. So what this amendment would now do is say you can't use human embryonic stem cells at all because you're eliminating that, although later on you're saying research involving the derivation use of human embryonic stem cells. It's confusing to me what you're doing right now. Do you want human embryonic stem cells in there at all? Do you want that to be a possibility at all or not? Because I think what you're saying right now is that it can't be ever, even if it doesn't involve the destruction of human embryos.
Well, my intention, and staff can help me with this, but my intention is to eliminate the part that would involve destruction. And my understanding is that the reason it needs to change is basically there was an error in the amendment that would have left a few words in there that wouldn't have made sense in the amendment.
The way I read it, I think the original amendment is doing what you want if you want to keep human embryonic stem cells in there. And then it would cover the not destroy part still. So I think you don't want to amend your amendment, but that's up to you.
You want to eliminate it entirely.
Just the part that means destruction.
I have a very specific notion of what I want. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what the legalese is. But now Ms. Newman is telling me that it was correct as it was.
Well, thank you. Then we'll pull that, and we'll stay with the amendment as we've discussed. Is there any other discussion on the amendment? Any other discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed to the amendment say aye. Aye.
Oh, or aye. Sorry.
The amendment fails. Back to the original bill as amended.
Chair Mahoney, I do have one more amendment.
Which one is it?
It is, where is it? 30, the 30 amendment. I can find it in my stack. And perhaps I could talk about it as it's being passed out.
Right ahead.
Basically, this is the same thing, except for it's just a portion of it, and it would remove the embryonic cloning of the somatic cell nuclear transplantation part of it. So it's kind of splitting that last amendment in half, only addressing the cloning portion. And I don't think I need to reiterate.
I would, as a chair, recommend that we probably don't spend a lot of time talking on it. Was there a question there, Representative Kahn?
This has no relationship to cloning. This is not a cloning issue. One could have a separate cloning, anti-cloning amendment. But this is a very complicated procedure which does not have to do with what we perceive as cloning, which is going to a human.
That made this a whole lot clearer, Representative Kahn. Any other questions?
I would oppose.
All in favor of this amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Same sign? Aye.
Aye.
The amendment fails. Back to the bill as amended. Are there any other... Representative Norton, did you want to ask your question?
I just was looking for some clarification, and I wanted to make clear that these were all... informed consent agreements, that no embryos are being taken without informed consent. And also, just to clarify, it doesn't specify whether donations could be made just for research purposes. It talks about leftovers after fertility. So I was just looking for clarification, and perhaps by not stating it allows it.
When you look at the process involved, I think it's going to be fairly unlikely. But, you know, I think the important part is the part that in the prohibition of sale and the prohibition of consideration is a really important part of that.
Okay, so not to complicate the bill, Representative Mahoney, I'm sorry. To not complicate the bill, we're just going to leave it as the embryonic leftovers at this point, and you could... The rest could be dealt with at some future.
Representative Kahn, could you get with Representative Norton to make sure this bill has got to go to higher ed and workforce, and I believe you sit on that particular committee, so you get to hear it a second time. Are there any other questions, Representative Burns?
Yeah, and this is specifically to Representative Norton's point. I think there's, and Representative Winkler asked the same question, I think there's more than one way to get embryonic tissue available for research. And the informed consent only addresses fertility treatments. And I was trying to make that point earlier when we talked about the federal bill. The federal bill was very specific, and it limited only one way to get the tissue available for research. This doesn't.
And I want to apologize to Representative Ruth. You had a question, and I jumped over you.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just would encourage members to vote against House File 34. It does destroy human life. And I just will tell you a quick story since we're really short on time here. And our daughter-in-law in California ended up having an ultrasound in 8 weeks. She just turned 8 weeks, which we weren't expecting her to have an ultrasound, and so I happened to be at the doctor with her. And we saw that little heart just pounding away. I mean, it was pounding away at 8 weeks. So I just want to impress upon you something that I will never forget, and it was amazing to see at that early age. So I oppose House File 34.
Let me make it perfectly clear that stem cells come out at about 5 days, not 8 weeks.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple summing comments here, if I may. I want to, first of all, just pay my respects to our colleague, Representative Kahn. And her enthusiasm for the research that goes on at the University of Minnesota, that has never been in question or doubt here. As we've had this great discussion today, and I sure wish we had another hour because there's all kinds of good stuff to really get into, but we don't because lunch is calling and we do need to actually take a vote on this. But folks, What we're being asked today, do today here is to take public money and go into an arena that some of us, as with election certificates that represent the cultures and societies in our districts, are not comfortable taking this state. Does that mean this kind of research is not moving ahead? No, not at all. We're one of 50 great American states in this noble experiment called the United States of America. Other states have moved ahead of us into this direction. Brave New World seems to overstate it for my purposes or give it too much of a luster, but it is a different direction. We can learn from that and observe that without actually taking our state there with public money. And I must add again that stem cell research on embryos and the things that we've called into question here today is not prohibited in this state. Private money is welcome to move in these areas of research, and I think it is quite telling that a lot of private money is moving into adult stem cell research and places where we've seen some pretty fantastic results. As I understand it, and we didn't get this line of questioning, not very much private money is moving in this direction, although it's very free to do so. We're being asked to put public money here. Other states are doing that, and I think that it would be just prudent for us to step back and wait a couple years and see what private money does, or public money, excuse me, in the several states that have taken this big step. And I'd like to just ask that we don't. I'd ask that you vote against the bill. And I do appreciate the leadership that the governor has tried to give by clarifying the type of bill he would sign when it's going in this area of embryonic stem cell research, and once again make sure that we're differentiating in this discussion. No one here is opposed to stem cell research or to science for the sake of science, but some of us do have great pause at taking the public treasury and putting it in areas where we're just not, it's not sitting well in our hearts, our minds, our consciences, respectfully understanding that with some people that is okay, and I'm not going to pass judgment on that. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for running a good meeting today, for allowing us to discuss this at quite some length, and again, I would respectfully request a no vote on House File 34.
Thank you, Representative Byrne. It's been a long day, and I'm going to hopefully say the last few words, and then I will renew the motion. I could have talked at length on this particular bill. Stem cell research is a matter that is, I have so many friends that this will affect. And I have chosen not to get into the middle of this particular argument other than to try to get this through this committee and on to the next one so it can be discussed in a wider arena. I'm grateful for Representative Kahn bringing this bill. I'm going to support it. I'm not going to support it as the chair of this committee. I will support it as the person that represents my district, and I will support your bill as a resident and a citizen of the state of Minnesota. Unless there's any further comments, I would like to renew the motion to move House File 34 as amended with no recommendation to the Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
No.
The motion passes. Representative Kahn, we will see you in higher ed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm willing to talk for hours to any member on either side of this issue.
The meeting stands adjourned.